tell me about the stories that you write. Why do you choose to write plays?
Oh, that's a good question. I have always written. I was writing in marketing. I had to support myself from a pretty early age. So it was never even a realistic thing for me, but I was able to retire early and I could just do whatever I wanted to do. And I was writing, and I'm a huge theater person in terms of going to plays, but it never occurred to me to actually write them, even though I wrote all the time. Mm-hmm. And I saw enough new work that it hit me like, you know, I think I could do better than this. And I was just really drawn to that form. So I, you know, I, at a, you know, at a later age, I went back to school, got my MFA, started writing short pieces. This time I met Kate, actually, is in the Boston Theater Marathon. One of my first short pieces I wrote was in the marathon, and that sort of got the ball rolling for me. So in terms of, it's just theater something since I was a kid, even though my family didn't go to theater, my school took me to the theater. We had a lot of good theaters in our community. Mm-hmm. And I was just mesmerized since I can remember. So it was just something I'm naturally drawn to.
Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of plays when you were younger stuck out to you? Something that really stayed with you?
You know, for the most part, I've always been most drawn to serious drama. The first play, I remember the first play I ever saw was Diary of Anne Frank, when I was, second grade, you know. But we had I grew up in Waltham, so it was right down the street from the Spingold Theater at Brandeis, and there was the Hovey Players in Waltham. So we had a lot of good theater they took us to, and I just that feeling when you go to the theater where all of a sudden everything is very artificial, and then all of a sudden you're just so sucked in, you know, and I just love that feeling.
Yeah.
Something I love, live performance. I love live performance of all kinds. It's just something exciting and kind of scary about it because it's different all the time. And so I think I'm just naturally drawn, even though I've never acted or very little, I've just been drawn to that form.
Yeah. And what kind of stories do you write?
I tend to focus almost exclusively on stories that are driven by women, female characters. So many, especially middle-aged women, are like desperate for plays. And you see that a lot in the communities where people who aren't, you know, who act for fun, but they're always looking for, are there plays with just women or more roles for women? Because, of course, classically, so many of the plays are written by men and most of the characters are male. So I think I was just struck at how many women were looking for roles and how few plays really had, I don't know, kind of quirky, non-traditional, distinctive female characters in the lead. So I really very quickly came to focus on creating female characters. And I tend largely toward realism, but with sort of a little edge of magical realism in there. And I love plot. It's so not fashionable, but I love plot. I love a good old-fashioned story. And it's so funny because people are drawn to it, you know, even though, you know, a lot of contemporary playwrights really are playing with form all the time. I just find that people keep saying, oh, it's such a relief to see a play that has a story. But I love storytelling. It's just something that drives me in plot, but, you know, with really complex characters in there. So I think old fashioned to a certain degree, but also, I tend to write very layered pieces. They're not usually simple pieces. So my struggle often is to keep a simple storyline because there's so much I want to say. you know, so I'm always struggling to say, pull it back, you know, keep the focus. I'm always taking away, I suppose, rather than adding, just to keep a nice, clean storyline for the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I can't say any particular subject. I think it just sort of whatever happens to strike me. I always, I never run out of ideas. I always have a pile of things I want to get to. And it just something, I just always, you know, something will sort of strike me. So no particular theme other than they're all female driven.
Yeah. Wow. Which writers do you take inspiration from?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I mean, I love the class. So I love Shakespeare and I love the Greeks. And I think to a certain degree, I guess I would say that I'm very inspired by the Greeks and that I love the drama, you know, the big issues, the tragedy, the visceral pain. I think I'm very drawn to that. And I like, in terms of contemporary pieces, I think when I think about, okay, what, because I'll tend to go back to a lot of contemporary plays and read them over and over and over. Right now, the play, and I'm so horrible at names, I'm looking for my Kindle here. No, it's not here. It is Disgraced. Do you, I don't know how much of a play person you are. It was just at Lincoln Center. It won the Pulitzer Prize.
No, I haven't read it.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and it's not a playwright I was familiar with before. And it's a very simple story, but it is powerful. And it's, you know, very contemporary. It's an Iranian man who's, you know, totally adopted American culture, and it just works up to a crisis. What I like about it, it's a simple story, but it makes you think differently. It challenges the way you think. It makes you uncomfortable, but I love to leave the theater feeling like I'm thinking about something in a different way
Yeah.
than before I came in. And I want to like talk forever. I want a play that makes me just want to talk forever and like go out for drinks and just not want to go home and just talk about the play. I want it to change me a little bit. I think great literature does that. I'm a big reader too. So I'm always looking for that when I go to the theater. So you know, that's something like lately. I love Good People. That's another one that I tend to reread and be just because it's got such a simple, straightforward format, but just I think brilliantly structured. So that's when I'm thinking about what I'm, which ones I kind of read over and over. And the funny thing is, those are men; those are male writers. But I think you know, those are the ones I think that I go back to. I'm trying to think of. I'm so horrible at remembering titles, so I'm trying to go back in my brain. I just saw. I love. You know, I'm thinking of Albie. I am a like the goat. I could watch over and over, and it sounds. Do you know that play?
Who is that? Is that Albie or who is that?
Yeah, the goat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one.
Okay, that is one that it sounds so bizarre. I never would have been drawn to see it, but it is just drop dead brilliant.
Yeah.
And just could read that over and over, and it's very Greek. I mean, it is so Greek. I mean, it just so reminds you of you know, the ancient Greek plays. But and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is another one.
Yeah.
Seen a lot of performances. I just saw the one that was just on Broadway, and I definitely one of the best pieces of theater I've ever seen in my life. I was just, and I've seen it several times, but if I felt like I've never seen it before. Such an exciting production.
Yeah, it really was. I saw that too, and I don't know. It does captivate you. You're right. It has this like Greek feeling to
Exactly. So I
it.
think that's probably me then, because every play I can think of, a contemporary has that element to it where it's just an extraordinary pain and vulnerability, and it's when you're stripped to your core as a human being. That I and that's that that is the Greeks, and I think that is what drives me. So, I mean, that probably in the last couple of years, that is the production I've seen that I was most absolutely blown away with.
And what do you think about classics and the fact that, we're doing Shakespeare so like 500 years later, and we still, we have different takes on it and different things like that. What do you, I don't know, do you have any thoughts about that, about sort of recreating myths and not, the Greek stories that just keep kind of resurfacing over and over again?
Well, I think the whole concept of myth and legend, I mean, every play to me, every great play across the generations, there's an element of myth and legend in it. But also, there's that primal thing. One of my professors at BU would say, like, that primordial ooze, he always would say, goes back, everything goes back to. But, and actually, in the play I'm writing now, it's very much the one of the key themes in my current play that actually Kate is producing at Boston mm-hmm. Playwrights. It's opening the season this year. It's about the line, you know, it's about it, when humans cross the line between civilization and savagery. Mm-hmm. And part of, you know, and it interplays a Puritan story, which is a historical, based on a true historical story, and also a contemporary story, but how that is this primal thing that ties all humankind across the centuries. It's something we're all capable of, no matter how much, what a veneer of civilization we put on it. That thing is still there and all of a sudden, under certain circumstances, will come out. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, so when you look at Shakespeare, I think when I go back there, I'm very excited about the elements of Shakespeare, the elements of the Greeks that are those primal things that will go on forever. What I don't like, and this is just a personal aesthetic, the second I read a description of a play that says it's a retelling of some classic story, honestly, I lose interest. I just feel like the playwright has no ideas. And I'm not really interested in a direct contemporary retelling of an old story. Yes, so many stories are based on the basic ideas of, but Shakespeare based his stories on basic ideas that preceded him. So it really isn't, you know, and with Shakespeare, it's so much about the writing and the craft, you know, and he could tell a good story. And, oh, I could just go to Shakespeare over and over. I never get bored. I can go to so I just saw The Tempest that they did here at Diane Paulus yeah. at, you know, ART. And I, you know, and it always is exciting. What surprises me, you're not going to, like, don't quote this anywhere for me, but one thing that shocked me, and of course I'm older than the typical students doing their MFAs, but I was stunned when they were asking about influence, and two of the very, very bright women basically said the same thing. Oh, yeah, I'm really not into Shakespeare or the Greeks. Wow. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, these women are teaching kids about playwriting. Because usually when you have a master's, you're teaching for the most part in playwriting. And I was shocked. Yes. But I think it's more the idea of it. I just think it was a generational thing where the exposure was different. Yeah. And I would be surprised. They're both young women in their early 20s. And I just would be surprised because they're so smart. If that didn't change, and maybe it's, you know, when you're exposed to it, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I could listen to Shakespeare every day happily and learn from and be excited by it. So,
yeah.
But I have to say that's, I probably get more inspiration from the Greeks than anywhere. So it goes back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fascinating. That really is. Do you think women writers tell different stories than men writers?
Yes.
Yes.
I really do. I'm so interested in these issues, and it's something I think, and again, maybe because I'm older, I've had a, you know, a very successful career. I did very well in marketing. And so I have that experience of seeing, watching the male-female dynamic in that kind of role, and then also looking at it in playwriting. And, you know, at the end of the day, every business is the same. But, I do, and I've read some things about it, but and it depends on the women. But yeah, I mean, you hear this said for sort of young, not younger, but new playwrights. So not an age thing as well as much an experience thing. I've read this, and I have found it to be true that a lot of times when women are writing stories, their character, a female character, isn't driving the story. Things are happening to them, and it's a very basic playwriting tenet. You don't, you know, in a play, but because of that, they lose control of the story because we need to dramatize.
Yeah.
To have a great play, you have to dramatize it. You don't want anything literally true because it's boring. You need to you need to make things happen in the way that creates the best arc, the best dramatic structure. But if it's too close to home, you know the characters too well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like if I was going to deliberately, if I was being pragmatic, I probably write to male and younger audience. Well, that just makes sense. Mostly women go to the theater. I just think, like my play with five middle-aged women, it's going to mostly draw women. It's just, it's the kind of thing you'd go with a bunch of girlfriends. You know, it's that kind of play. But it wasn't on purpose. I just was writing. I think the play I'm writing now would draw very, like, really old people. It depresses me, I got to be honest. When seriously, my husband and I go to a ton of theater. When I'm like, oh my God, we're the youngest people here, it makes me sad. And not because I don't like old people, because it's the future theater. So I get super excited as a theater goer. If I go to a play and I see, you know, it's ethnically diverse and it's age diverse, mm-hmm. I feel this energy and excitement that really drives me. So I personally love going to a play where I see a diverse audience.
Yeah.
But I can't, and would I love to write a play where I got that kind of a diverse audience? Absolutely. I think that I wouldn't do it deliberately. You know, and I think my, you know, I don't know that, I think my work is fairly traditional. It's not super edgy. You know, so I think I probably will always draw a more traditional audience because it's the kind of writing and work I'm passionate about, and I don't try to alter that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some people love it and some people don't. I mean, I think that's the thing. So, you know, it's good to just kind of tie yourself to the people who love your kind of work, mm-hmm. and make the connections with people who, and I've been lucky, you know, I did two people of the play and I was like, oh, that's like, and the woman is aware that I'm working. You kind of find the people that naturally like your work. And it's not good or bad. There are people who hate my work who are great people. It's just not their cup of tea.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. What kind of theater do you think is the easiest to get produced? Do you ever feel pressured to create plays that fit in with this mold?
I don't, because I don't need to earn a living, to be honest. You know, I'm financially independent because I, you know, had a real job. So I don't have to, I don't have financial concerns. So I don't have that kind of pressure. To be honest, I really have the luxury of writing, exactly what I want. I definitely see with younger people, especially the men. Absolutely. I can tell you 100% I see it with the men and not the women. And I think sometimes women don't, like, especially if they're married, they don't really feel like everything depends on them in a funny way, whereas I think the men do. And I see it's the men, I have seen the young guys who definitely very specifically write things like with low characters. I'm on the phone, sweetheart. Okay, can you I think I definitely have noticed that, and it's, again, not a bad thing. You know, men will write, like, with two character plays, because they can get produced at a lot of tiny theaters.
Mm-hmm.
They'll write hot button issues. You know, like this one guy I know, he will just pick whatever the issue is it's going to get, you know, and I he's so talented and versatile, and he's sort of playing, and that's where he is, and he's going to be an amazing playwright someday. But for me, I just, you know, it's smart in that you learn every time you produce something. So if you deliberately write something that, but I can't write something I'm not like so excited about.
Right.
It's just trying. But I don't think it's necessarily bad, especially for younger people, because they're playing with style and experimenting, and every production you get, you become a better writer.
Yeah.
So the only time I've ever been tempted like that is with comedy. Mm. With short plays to say, I'm writing a comedy. My husband writes a lot of comedy. And he whips the stuff off, and he gets it in everywhere. And I'll be writing these small, and he'll be like, oh my God, this is crazy. Your plays are like so much better. This is, and he's not being like, he'll just be like this. He said, I can't even believe this got in and yours didn't get in. And you know, his stuff, but he writes almost exclusively comedy. And you know, you'll look at a lot of festivals will really skew 70-80% comedy.
Right.
They'll even ask for it. So, you know, so that's the only time I do find myself saying, you know what, I'm going to write, you know, and I just wrote one, and I'm like, I know this is going to get everywhere. But sometimes it is just fun. It's fun to be selected. You deal with so much rejection in playwriting. It is fun just to, like, know your work's going to go up. And it is wonderful to make people laugh. So, yes, I have deliberately written comedies because I know people like them.
Right.
But I also love, love, love when people laugh at something I write, I have to say. So, I, you know, but no, not to market it or to get it produced. And I'll give you an example of that. The full length I'm going back to after this one, the set on it. See, most playwrights who are sort of emerging will write plays that can be produced in very small theaters with minimal props. Okay, I play that I have to go back and finish it off, and this is the one that Melinda really liked.
From the beginning to the end of the play, the women are, this group of women are taking a restaurant that's gone into disrepair and been sold. And it goes from this dilapidated old restaurant to being completely renovated by the end of the play.
Wow.
That's not an easy set.
Yeah, no.
And I knew it when I wrote it, but love the visual and the drama, and it worked as a, you know, a metaphor for what, and it was like, you know, and it could be done, you know, fairly simply depending on how much effort you want to put into it, but you know what? It's a play I wanted to write, so I wrote it. This one, I'm going between Puritan and contemporary worlds. So there's a forest surrounding a contemporary home, and there's an interplay of two periods. It is not an easy set. It truly is not.
Yeah.
But again, I'm just writing the plays I want to write, and I think I do tend to write plays that are meant for bigger theaters or stages, which is a hard place to be for, you know, somebody who doesn't have a huge name, because those are very expensive plays to produce. But
yeah. But
I think it's a luxury for me, and in all fairness, you know, and honesty, for a lot of playwrights, they want to make their mark, because once you get one play up, it really does make everything easier. Getting that first production is so hard. Oh, a first professional production, like an equity production, is just really, really, really difficult. So I don't think it's a negative thing that a lot of young playwrights are writing things that are easier to produce on purpose.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just really playing what you can to get produced. I mean, it's just the, you know,
if you literally could have a 100 times more opportunities to get it produced if you write something that can be produced in a black box with a very, very low budget for set.
Right, right.
And you know what? I wish I had an idea that could be done like that. I just don't.
Yeah, no, I gotcha. Are there characters or plays that you still haven't found a place for? Are there outside forces that have prevented you from writing these characters or plays?
I think them always have these characters and ideas floating, and I never know what play I'm going to write next. Like right now, I know I want to go back and finish a play, but I have two plays that are sort of connected to this play I've got going up now, and then another play that's totally unrelated. And I think I know what play I'm going to write next, but it's just one of those things. Like all of a sudden, something will hit me, mm-hmm. and I'll absolutely know which play I have to write next. So, no, I don't think there's anything that stopped me. In fact, if I was going to be stopped, the play that I'm getting produced with Kate would be the play that would have stopped me, because it is brutally difficult to write with a Puritan language. And the whole, I'm not a historian. I'm not even interested in historically based plays. It was just this thing that came to me. And it just is really, really, really hard to write. There's a lot of research. So I think if I was going to be stopped, that would be the play. And I, you know what, because if I wasn't in this fellowship, I might have stopped, because it was so difficult, and there were definitely times I wanted to give up, like, oh my gosh, because there's also a lot of sensitivities in the play, because, it deals with a real story of Abenaki Indians who are massacred, and it really gets you into this. It's very controversial, right now. Because, you know, it's sort of honoring this woman who killed these Indians to escape, but she would have died. But on the other hand, we're honoring this woman who, you know, killed and scalped 10, you know, Native Americans. And it really is very tough from a political correctness standpoint. And I knew if I could tell the story, because what I'm really saying has nothing to do with circumstances, but it takes a while to get to the heart. Like, you have to kind of get your pieces in place. And a couple of actors during the readings were like, well, I don't feel comfortable if you say it. I said, you know what, it isn't what the play is about. Just try, you know. And they were so, and you know what, now that I've got it, where nobody even thinks it. But
right.
During the process, it was like everybody wants to get out. I said, no, trust me, nobody's going to have it. It's not about those issues. It's simply that the whole play is about stories being more about the storyteller. And you'll see that it becomes irrelevant as the storyline progresses. But, you know, it was the flack I got when I started from people who write like issue plays. They wanted it to be an issue play. And it just isn't. I don't write issue plays. I don't like issue plays.
Yeah.
I just don't. I really don't like issue plays. I like plays that are about character. And if there are issues under, you know, that come out of that, great. I don't want to play about global warming. You know, I just don't. If there are characters who are caught in a situation connected to global warming, great.
Right.
Don't tell me a play is about an issue because it's then to me, it's immediately a play I don't want to see.
Exactly.
So if I was going to ever be stopped, this would have been the play. So, you know, and sometimes it's uncomfortable, you know, like things and people read into, you know, and then you got to stay away from things. I think it's just bad playwriting anyway that are so close to home, because I think you write badly when the situation is too close to your own experience because you're being too literal.
Mm.
But also, of course, you know, you could hurt people if you get too close. So you've got to have the confidence not to, and you know, those are never the best ideas anyway. I think it's the big issues we connect with that we write about that are good, not the deep, the specific.
Right.
I honestly can't think of any that stopped me from writing any idea that I've had. I mean, there's a play I'm going to probably write next that has that opera element in it. And, you know, I don't know a darn thing about opera. There's an element in there, and, you know, I will learn and work with somebody who does, you know, who does sing. And it's not like what the play's about, but there's an element in there. But, I mean, I'm going to write it.
Yeah, exactly. So this is my last question, but...
Can I just quickly amend that answer?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, this one has come up. I forgot about this one. It's writing... one thing that really bothers me, to be honest, is when I see people... And maybe it's how I'm interpreting. They'll deliberately put ethnic characters in a play because they know they'll get produced at a higher rate. Because, you know, a lot of theaters are looking for a play that can be cast ethnically diverse. So when all of a sudden they're specifying a character needs to be African-American, and you're like, that doesn't even make any sense. That it's like, you could just say it could be any ethnicity, but to specify, like, why? You know, and you realize the person's doing it to make it more marketable.
Yeah.
And that's an issue I've had in terms of writing that I don't feel, I personally do not feel that I could write an ethnic character well because I don't understand that life experience. I don't feel like it would be true. I write plays that could be cast with any ethnicity, but it would basically be, you know, an ethnic person raised with the same background because and playwrights have very mixed feelings. It probably goes 50-50. You know, can somebody write, you know, an ethnic character? I mean, maybe it's a minor character, but for me to have a lead character that is a different ethnicity, where that ethnicity really defines the person, I don't think I would be remotely qualified or capable of doing that. But yet, many playwrights do. I just feel like I personally... struggle with that question. I think I would have a really hard time writing. And it's come up in a couple of plays I've thought about. And I just don't feel credible that I get that experience. You know, and I was talking to a friend of one of the other women in my program about it. I said, you know, the truth is that the only black kids I grew up with had white parents. And I said, you know, I said to her, tell me, you know, help me understand. Here's what I kind of feel like. I don't feel qualified to write this, you know. And it came up in a play where I was kind of thinking about it. And we just had a really interesting discussion. And she didn't have a right or wrong. And she writes lots of white characters, but she grew up with more white people than black people. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't even grow up in an ethnically diverse area. So I think that stopped me from saying, if it isn't something that I can say something unique and true about, you know, I don't feel qualified to write characters like that. And so I stick to what I feel like I have some unique insight and life experience with. And I don't know if that's good or bad, to be honest. But I get a little uncomfortable when I feel like people are deliberately trying to market their plays by putting in ethnic characters with no sense of genuine ethnicity.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It bugs me, to tell you the truth. And I don't know, maybe it shouldn't, but when I feel like it's a marketing play, it bugs me.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, that sounds irritating. So,
I have not written characters that I don't feel qualified to write, frankly.
Yeah. My last question is, it's a hard question to answer, so whatever you think about this, but what would gender parity in the theater look like to you?
I don't think that's hard. I mean, I think, you know, that the proportion of produced plays is, you know, mirrors the proportion of men and women who are writing plays at the same level. I mean, I'm not saying, I'm saying that if you look at, say, new pool playwrights, let's use MFAs as an example, which certainly is not the only place where, new playwrights are coming out, but just use it as an example, where the people being accepted into MFA programs, the proportion of male is mirrored in the new plays being produced. You know, it's just a proportion thing. I think you'll see it when, if you take play, it's hard to say when a playwright's at the same level. That's where it's really tricky and where we get away with a lot of this crap with gender is, oh, well, they're just better playwrights.
Right.
You can say that. But if you take something that is, that isn't subjective, like an MFA program, people are, just assume that because I think men and women are kind of let in pretty equally. I've never seen that more men or women are necessarily going into those. I could be wrong. So let's say that there's a fair representation of just people of the potential, that represents a pool of potential people. If that was reflected in new plays, and it is not, it is definitely not reflected in new plays being produced. So I really think it would just be a proportion.
Yeah.
To what it would look like to me. And I think it has to start. I honestly believe the only way it will ever happen, though, is when male constructs are not used to define what a good playwright is.
Yeah.
And that's really what I've seen when people want to argue. Like, I was told by a man that, he was sort of snapping at me, giving me feedback, saying that my problem is I listen to too many people and that I take feedback. And so he said, where do you want to go next? I said, well, I've had some interesting feedback. He goes, stop right there. Fuck feedback. When somebody gives you feedback, you think, fuck you. You don't care about their feedback. He said, I'm looking for somebody who knows what they want. And now he gives me an example of this guy. Why not? I want you to say to me, this is what I'm doing. I don't give a fuck what anybody else is doing. And I said, I hear what you're saying. However, you're telling me that the only way you will consider me successful or consider producing my work is if you can use a male construct to define my behavior in interpreting feedback, because women do listen to a lot more feedback. That doesn't mean I'm taking everybody's ideas but my own and giving them equal weight. It means I'm taking it in, I'm considering it, and then I'll make my choices. I said, frankly, I've seen a lot of problems with male playwrights who don't want to hear. They get on this thing and they won't get off it, and they don't want to hear the feedback. And I said, in both ways are wrong. You don't want to be too susceptible where you lose your own vision. But by the same token, some of the people who are good writers but never go further is because they won't listen to feedback. They're too, they just have their own path and nobody's going to shake them. I said, so when you tell me that because I said to you as a first step, I'm going to take a look at the feedback, that automatically I'm making a mistake and I'm not a playwright you're going to consider, you're saying, and you're basically saying, unless I work by a male construct, it's not a good playwright. And I've seen so many examples of that where it's, if we behave in the way men behave, which means that we're always self-advocating. Women aren't self-advocating. Women want to write a good play, and they want someone to say, hey, it's all about the play. They don't want to have to push the out, because that's a male construct, and it's like, okay, you want to change the entire dynamic of the way women are programmed, this biological environmental thing, and say that unless we frankly, throw that away and work the way men work, our plays are not good enough and will not be considered. They look in their thing. I want somebody who's confident, who gets out there, who doesn't care about feedback, and it's like, okay, well, you want men then. And I'm not saying all men and all women, but I'm saying most women, again, are programmed to be, to listen. Yeah. And I agree. It's been a mistake I have made where I'm so respectful of others' expertise that I tend to listen to everybody and then I get lost like, oh my God, I can't do these 20 things because they all contradict each other. And I did learn to say this, I've got to get my through line and I've got to keep my focus on that. And then, either take people or not, but keep to my own vision. And frankly, that guy yelling at you like that, he yelled. he really was rude. But the truth is, it really helped me. However, I still think my original point was really bad. Like, you're basically saying, unless somebody works like, you know, what is a typical male construct for taking feedback, then they're not, what he was saying was a confidence issue, and basically he's not interested in working with people. And so it's a little scary if, and you know, and that a lot of men are in the positions of power, that it's like, if you don't think this way, and the way he described is such a male construct, and that is probably the fifth or sixth time I've heard the way the value of playwrights are things that are traditionally male things. So I think there's a little bit, it's very misleading when people say that men are writing, it's about the way men write plays. I really believe they get a lot of the opportunities because of this type of single-minded focus and confidence, and people value the male way of thinking and approaching a problem. And nobody is seeking the work. It's so competitive. This is, I'm sorry, I'm saying a lot. I just want to say this one last thing because I think it's so important. Playwriting is one of the reasons I didn't want to be a playwright. I almost like didn't want to, because the world has too many playwrights. There's too many. I thought, I want to do something more productive. We don't need another playwright. I was just driven to do it. And I didn't want to be, because we don't need another playwright. And there's so, so many though, that it's so competitive for every slot, that the truth is, unless you're pushing aggressively to go after that, your work will never get seen. And men are much more willing to push aggressively, push people aside, you know, and get that slot. If it were a case where people had to seek work, I think women would be equally represented. Mm-hmm. Because women kind of want to be sought out, just like in jobs. We know this is a fact. This is just a statistic. It's not my opinion. In business, men will ask for promotions much more, and they'll be much more specific. I hired hundreds of people, and that, you know, it's not just anecdotal. This is all backed up. And men will get promoted a lot more because they ask and they demand. You don't want to say no, but the truth is, if a woman's working a butt off, and I was a business owner, I know this, and she doesn't ask you for a raise because you don't really have the money, and she seems perfectly happy, you're not going to really go and say, do you want a raise?
Right.
If I is saying, you know what? Here somewhere else because I need the money. And you're like, okay, I'm going to lose this person, but I'm not going to lose this person. And I'm telling you, as a female, now I tried never to do that. Of course, men, I was like, no. But the truth is, when I only had so much money and I had to run a business because I had 100 families depending on me, you got to give the raise to the person who's demanding it, not the person who hasn't broached it.
Yeah.
And I, even though I know this, it's still hard for me to advocate for myself in playwriting.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do it as women. We, how many articles are you going to read? 100 that tell you, but you still don't feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe parody to me is when people are seeking out plays and not looking for the playwright necessarily to be this confident person who, but to say the work is confident, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about how the playwright presents himself. It's about the work. That to me is going to be first step. Because I think we're putting way too much in how the playwright presents himself, which is why we produce males.
Yeah.
And when it, you know, and when the talent pool and the produced plays line up, it will be parody. But I honestly believe that's not where the problem starts. It really starts in the MFA programs and the bottom levels in how we, the behavior we think exemplifies a good playwright.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I completely agree. Thank you so much.
And women helping women is how women, I mean, I have to tell you, the three people who really helped me get to professional production, you know, have been women. I've had, you know, and it wasn't like I sought them out. It's three women in the theater who have, if I say who are the people that are most responsible for me kind of, you know, being somebody who's, you know, getting a professional production, you know, when most playwrights never do, it's all women.
Yeah.
So, women helping women will be the key driver, because women were willing to go out and notice somebody who isn't speaking up for themselves, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's such a huge, I'm glad you're doing this. It's a huge issue. It's one I'm, you know, obviously passionate about, but honestly, not so much for myself as I really am when I see these young girls who are so talented and they just drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's reaching out to them. I think women need someone to reach out to them more than men do.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, I'm glad you're doing this. I hope this comes out well, because it's such an important issue, and I just feel like no one's really nailed it. Like, I read about it, but I feel like I've never seen it put together, you know, with all the pieces in a way that I'm like, yep, that's it. Everyone seems like they're sort of taking one aspect of it, but I feel like nobody does the whole thing.
Right, and I guess my angle is sort of that I think statistics are a really, really great thing to look at, and I'm happy that people are doing it. They're trying to organize more studies, but I feel like sometimes that statistics can really cover up what's really important, that, like, you know, you're talking about numbers of women, but then you're kind of, you're taking away that they have individual, you know, identities and personalities and writing, you know, processes and things like that, that I think are really the core of what we should be looking at. I don't know. So that's, I guess, where I'm coming from.
Yes. And women as a whole do tend to write and promote themselves very differently than men, but everything is geared towards, you know, the way men work.
Yeah.
And that's what has to change, not the plays. It's rewarding and valuing and getting plays from whoever's in your face the most.
Yeah.
And every producer will tell you, I could produce 500 plays, all of which are great. You know, and it's the person who's like right there and who's doing something, you know, that I'm going to, and who's on my case all the time, who's going to get produced.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, thank you for doing this.